Flight by Light, a light sail preview this week on Planetary Radio. Welcome. I'm Matt Kaplan of the Planetary Society with more of the human adventure across our solar system and beyond. This time we've got a special look ahead at the mission of LightSail 2. I may already be on Florida's Space Coast as you hear this, eagerly, anxiously looking forward to the launch of the Planetary Society's little CubeSat. Bruce Betts and Jason Davis will tell you what to expect in minutes. What's Up with Bruce is also ahead. We'll begin by spending a few minutes with the Chief Operating Officer of the Planetary Society. Jennifer Vaughn was already Bill's second-in-command when our test mission, LightSail 1, lifted off. She is even more excited to see this first attempt to use the light of the sun to propel our silver-winged spacecraft. Jennifer, we don't hear from you often enough on Planetary Radio. This certainly gives us a wonderful reason, I was going to say excuse, to get you heard directly on the show. Thank you for joining us to talk a little bit about this wonderful mission that is about to begin.
Thank you, Matt. I am so excited to be here, and I am fired up about LightSail.
As are we all. 10 years in the making. Take us back to the beginnings of this project, and then we'll talk about the even earlier work that the Society did with solar sailing.
Yeah, so depending on where you want to start that history line with us, it can go much further back than 10 years. But 10 years is really what was the beginning of LightSail. For those who have been following along with us and know our story, we had an earlier attempt at solar sailing. But after a failed rocket launch, we went back to the drawing board. We hit the ground and said, hey, what should we do? And we went to our members and said, what do you want us to do? Do you want us to try again? Or should we just move on and do something else? And our members came out and said very loudly and very proudly, try again, do this again. So with that, we went and said, okay, well, what could be different this time around? And where might we have an opportunity with solar sailing? And that question, line of questioning, led us to the design of a very small spacecraft and a propulsion mechanism that might work for other small spacecraft. And that became LightSail.
4 years ago, we had LightSail 1. And I know you get this question all the time because all of us do. Didn't we prove that we could pull this off 4 years ago?
We proved that we could pull off some of it years ago. So what's really important to remember with LightSail 1 is there was no solar sailing. LightSail 1 was 100% a demonstration of the sail deployment. All we were doing was making sure that we could get a spacecraft in orbit, we could talk to the spacecraft, and we could deploy the sail safely. And then it got pulled back into Earth's atmosphere. So it was over. There was no sailing. We were proud of ourselves, and it was exciting, and the world was along that journey with us. But really, all we did was prove that the deployer worked. So this is our first chance at really proving solar sailing in Earth orbit. And that means controlling our spacecraft. Every 90 minutes when it passes, we have to actively control that sail.
Let's go back to that earlier project that you alluded to, Cosmos One, which was the real first attempt by the Planetary Society to fly a solar sail.
Yeah, so it seems like a million years ago right now, and it really was quite a long time ago. So 2005 is when we launched Cosmos One. And of course, it was many years in the making. So we really can trace back our history in solar sailing, as far as the Planetary Society's investment in a project, all the way back to 1999. So we're at a 20-year anniversary of when the idea first started being cooked at the Planetary Society. Could we, as a citizen-funded group, have our own solar sail mission, our own planet, our own mission in general, but solar sail was what we were targeted on. And that became Cosmos One, which was a wonderful partnership with a number of contacts that our previous executive director, Lou Friedman, made in Russia. along with the support of Andruyan. So Andruyan was our key financial sponsor of Cosmos One, and our members were absolutely behind as backers of the mission. And all together, we came up with this very large, elegant, eight-bladed sail. It was much, much more complex than light sail is. And there are pros and cons to that. Complex doesn't necessarily mean better. It just was a much more complex spacecraft. And we got it built, we got it tested, we got it ready to go, we launched it, and then we heard it was in the ocean.
Yeah. You and I were there 14 years ago. I mean, Lou Friedman was actually there for the launch of Cosmos One from a Russian submarine. But all of us were in the old home of the Planetary Society following along, and there's no getting around that it was a tremendous disappointment, but something that I'm still very proud of.
Oh, absolutely. And I think all of our members should be very, very proud. Again, this is history in the making for citizen-funded spacecraft, and they started with Cosmos, and it was quite the letdown. But again, they rallied behind the organization. They were enthusiastic about trying again. And here we are. We're right on the precipice, ready to launch again. And I have very high hopes that this is going to go great this time.
Yeah, you and me both. You mentioned Andruyan, who probably everyone knows, was the partner in every way of one of our three founders, Carl Sagan. And of course, since then has been very busy creating things like Cosmos. And in fact, that's how she and Carl met the first time around for the first edition of Cosmos that starred Carl Sagan. But she has also been the creator of the latter day Cosmos series. Longtime supporter, both monetarily of projects like this, but certainly her heart has always been with us as well. Didn't she have a role in the genesis of the LightSail project?
She did. She has a role. I mean, she... Anne's a visionary, very much like Carl and Lou and Bruce Murray, our founders. Anne, too, is a visionary, and she was, of course, saddened by the loss of Cosmos One. She had very high hopes, and she put a lot behind that mission. So it was a sad day, but when we had the opportunity to look forward to another step, it was Anne who really came out on our behalf and helped us raise the initial funding to do a study. And that study is what led us to see what we could do with small spacecraft and maybe a high-powered propulsion mechanism like solar sailing. And we might be able to really take a dent into solving this problem of how do you fly small spacecraft with very little fuel. Now I'm excited to get so many more pictures and actually be able to prove out that we can change our orbit through sailing, not just deploying the sail.
Thank you, Jennifer. I can't wait. I sure hope that things don't slip, or at least not by much, and that on that evening of the 24th of June, we watch that big Falcon Heavy carry light sail up into Earth orbit.
Go light sail.
Go light sail.
Go light sail.
That's Jennifer Vaughn, the Chief Operating Officer of the Planetary Society. Looking forward to that launch.
Me too.
Our LightSail 2 mission preview continues in a minute, when I'll be joined by Bruce Betts and Jason Davis. Much more about LightSail 2 and the Society's long history with solar sailing missions can be heard in the podcast version of this week's show. You'll find it at planetary.org/radio. This is Planetary Radio.
40 years ago, my professor, Carl Sagan, shared his dream of exploring the cosmos with solar sails. The Planetary Society's LightSail 2 will soon become the first small spacecraft to be propelled only by the light of the sun. I'm Bill Nye, and I'll be there as a rocket carries our craft into orbit. Tens of thousands of members have made this day possible. Already part of our LightSail team? Thank you. It's never too late to join us. You can learn more at planetary.org/membership.
Hello, I'm Robert Picardo, Planetary Society board member and now the host of the Society's Planetary Post video newsletter. There's a new edition every month. We've already gone behind the scenes at JPL, partied at Yuri's Night, and visited with CEO Bill Nye. We've also got the month's top headlines from around the solar system. You can sign up at planetary.org/connect. When you do, you'll be among the first to see each new show. I hope you'll join us.
Welcome back to a special Planetary Radio Light Sail 2 preview. I'm Matt Kaplan. Bruce Betts is not just the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. He has served as Light Sail program manager for years, coordinating every aspect of Light Sail 2's progress toward demonstrating that a solar sail deployed by a tiny spacecraft can successfully raise its orbit around the Earth. Planetary Society digital editor Jason Davis is also our embedded reporter at the project. No journalist knows the effort better or has spent more time writing about it. Bruce, Jason, thank you very much. Great to get both of you on at the same time to talk about this imminent launch. We just heard from Jennifer about how excited she is, and I shared my own similar emotions regarding this. How are you guys feeling in these last days leading up toward what we hope, at least, will be the launch of Light Sail?
Excited, Matt. Really, really excited. And a little tense.
Yeah. Well, I don't know anybody who's got better reason to be a little bit tense about it. Jason, the same?
The same. And I'm just, having gone through the first time around, I'm always a little bit nervous. But no, I'm feeling good about it as we get close here, that things are looking good. So let's keep it that way.
Where are we now, or maybe better stated as, where is Light Sail 2 right now?
Right now, the spacecraft is at Kennedy Space Center in the possession, presumably, of SpaceX, either already mounted on the launch vehicle or about to be mounted on the launch vehicle. We're hoping we might get a picture of it, but that's not confirmed yet. But we know that it's down there, and it's either on the vehicle already or getting close to being on the vehicle with Prox 1.
It's inside Prox 1, right, Bruce?
Yes, so it's inside the Georgia Tech spacecraft Prox 1 and will be ejected from Prox 1 a week after launch.
Is this Prox 1's main function now is basically to babysit Light Sail 2 until it says goodbye 7 days later?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing, but it's a student-built spacecraft, so it's demonstrating the ability to do this. It was selected along with Light Sail as part of the inside of it by the University NanoSat program of the Air Force and Department of Defense for this launch. That's how we ended up with the launch to an altitude which is higher than usual and useful to us for solar sailing.
At this point, is Light Sail 2 essentially on its own, or at least in the sense that, you know, we can't any longer top off the batteries? And is it just fast asleep for the moment?
Yes, it is in technical terms chilling hard inside Prox 1. We'll be inside the rocket. We did the last top off of the batteries a couple months ago and delivered it for integration at AFRL, Air Force Research Laboratory, into Prox 1. It will remain dormant until it is deployed from Prox 1.
I want to know when you guys last stood in the presence of the spacecraft. I'm wondering if I had that opportunity more recently than you because of that visit I made up to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Jason, when did you last see Light Sail 2?
I think the last time I saw it was at Cal Poly. I'm just trying to think which specific test it was. It might have been the last day in the life test, and if that's the case, then it has definitely been a year, I would say, if not more, that we kind of put it in storage and didn't get it out much after that.
Bruce?
I last saw it more than a year ago, so yes, Matt, you saw it last.
I win!
Did you touch it, Matt? Give it one last goodbye poke or anything? If so, you shouldn't tell us.
I warned you not to touch it.
I know. I told the people there at Cal Poly, I said, if anything goes wrong, because they slid it out of the little Peapod carrier, and I said, you know what Bruce is going to do to me if anything happens to this spacecraft because I'm here and you want to show it to me? And they kept saying, ah, no, it's no problem, no problem at all.
I want names.
Yeah, when we return to the scene of the crime, we're going to say, who was the last person to actually see the spacecraft?
And no, you come on, guys. Jason, you especially know that I must protect my sources.
So. Right.
How automated will the operation of Light Sail be for either of you on each of its orbits as we try to raise that orbit? it's going to have to reorient itself. What, a 90-degree turn twice for each one of those? Is that going to have to be commanded from Earth by human beings, or is LightSail going to be handling that on its own?
LightSail will handle that on its own. There are key points in the mission that we retain control from the Earth to do those things. So deployment of the solar panels and deployment of the solar sail being the two most notable. That happens through Earth command, but just taking care of itself happens automatically. So orienting itself, depending on what mode we put it in, it orients itself relative to the Earth's magnetic field to optimize communications. It's always in the process of charging its batteries and keeping track of the batteries. There are a lot of software things in place to deal with possible issues, a lot more than we had on LightSail 1, so that detects some of its own problems and attempts to fix them through rebooting processes or rebooting the entire spacecraft, in fact. So it's a combination, but once we get to that solar sailing, it's an automated operation. We just couldn't count on commanding it regularly enough to command everything that goes on.
Yeah, that would have been quite a job for somebody or for several somebodies. As the program manager for LightSail, I can kind of imagine what you're going to be up to during the spacecraft operations period. Jason, what do you expect to be doing as our embedded reporter?
Every time there is a major mission milestone, obviously, we will be talking about it. We'll have regular coverage on the blog with everything that happens. We'll also try to cover some of the minor stuff as well, in between milestones that may not be as notable to the general public, but for some of our members that like to really get the nitty-gritty details, we'll definitely cover some of that as well.
Bruce, how long does LightSail need to do what we hope it's going to do for us to say, yes, this was a successful demonstration of solar sailing by a CubeSat?
After the sail deploys, we've defined our primary mission as a month after that, to demonstrate controlled solar sailing, changing the orbit the way we expect to change the orbit. Depending on how things work with tracking the spacecraft, that may happen within days or it may be weeks before we're able to do that. We anticipate changing the orbit by up to a few hundred meters per day. We have two ways to track the spacecraft. One is just through the Air Force and their standard tracking of all spacecraft and delivering orbital elements that describe the orbits from that. But we're also partnering with the International Laser Ranging Service, and we have little tiny corner cube reflectors on the spacecraft. So various stations around the world will be shooting lasers up and trying to hit LightSail, and if they do, then they'll get an instantaneous measurement of exactly where it is, or quite precisely anyway. So that may enable us to determine things even faster if it works right.
And that sounds like a fun game for them to be playing. I want to say, I'm proud to live on a planet that has an international laser, what'd you say, ranging service?
Yeah, pretty cool. And so we applied to have them do this, and they accepted us. And so it's moving forward.
Cool job. When can we expect to see the first pictures, the first images from the cameras on LightSail?
Well, again, if things go well, there will be some very boring pictures in the first 2, 3, 4 days or so. So when the spacecraft panels are still closed, we will take test pictures from the cameras and download a couple of those. And so it'll just show kind of the whatever light's leaking in. We'll see the deployment motor and, some wires and exciting things like that. Once we deploy the solar panels a few days into the mission, then the cameras are on those panels, and we plan to take pictures and hopefully have those out and released, hopefully even before sail deployment. And then we will take a whole sequence of images from the two different fisheye lenses looking different directions and hopefully create movies, pseudo movies, images every few seconds of this 3-minute deployment that will actually show the deployment. Now, we should get thumbnails of that within a day or two after the sail deploys, and then it'll depend on communications passes how long it takes to download the images, the larger images.
Can't wait. Jason, where are you going to be for the launch? I suspect you won't be very far from me.
Probably not. Yeah, as far as I know, I will be at the Saturn V Center, which is where a lot of Planetary Society members who have tickets to view the launch with us will be. Alternatively, I would be out at the NASA press site, but I think we're kind of still working out who's going to be where. But either way, I will be right there at the launch watching it go, just like you.
Yes. And what will be the best way for people listening to us now and everybody else to follow, you know, moment by moment, what happens as we count down to the launch?
Planetary.org always has the latest and greatest news and things we put out, as well as our social media accounts are usually the same way. And for the launch itself, SpaceX.com will have the live stream. We'll probably embed that on our homepage as well, so people can just one-stop shop, come to our website and watch it all happen.
And anybody who hasn't watched the SpaceX live coverage of these launches that they do, you're missing out. It makes for great television, if I do say so myself. And of course, Planetary Society Twitter is at Explore Planets. Guys, thank you for this preview, and go light sail.
Yay!
Go light sail. Yay!
That's Bruce Betts, the Light Sail Program Manager for the Planetary Society. Also our chief scientist, and by the way, as you might expect, he'll be joining us again in just a moment or two here for this week's What's Up, and Jason Davis, our digital editor at the Society, the embedded reporter for many years now with LightSail. As promised, we see the return of the chief scientist of the Planetary Society. You've been away so long. It's Bruce Betts back to do what we do every week. We only get to report on LightSail every now and then. Although maybe more frequently in the coming weeks, if all goes well, right?
Totally. It'll be the return of LightSail 2, just like the return of Bruce Betts, the revenge of Bruce Betts.
I want to see that sequel. tell us about that great sky that LightSail's headed into.
Nice segue.
Thank you.
I think the party's in the evening with Jupiter. Already up in the early evening, looking super bright over in the east, brighter than any star in the sky, hanging out to the left of the dimmer but redder Antares, the bright reddish red giant star in Scorpius. Can give you a nice chance to learn the constellation Scorpius. And over kind of the other direction to the left is Sagittarius. So it's a lovely, lovely setup, and Saturn's rising not too long after sunset and will appear in the east looking yellowish over in Sagittarius. And so both good targets for visible looks or binoculars or telescopes. We move on to this week in space history. It was 15 years ago, 2004, that Spaceship One became the first private human spaceflight. All right, we'll move away from that and move on to Random Space Fact.
Good boy.
Apollo 10 was the only Apollo crew, all of whose members went on to fly subsequent missions aboard Apollo's spacecraft. John Young later commanded Apollo 16, Gene Cernan Apollo 17, and Tom Stafford commanded Apollo Soyuz test project, the Apollo side of that. All right, so we move on to the trivia contest. And an obscure trivia about LightSail 2, I asked you, what is the name of the alloy that the LightSail spacecraft booms, the things that pull the sail out and give it structure, what are they made of? How do we do, Matt?
There were interesting responses this time, because the majority of people came up with something which was not exactly what you were looking for. There were a few who totally got lost. I mean, there's Tim in Edmond, Oklahoma, who really put in a great effort to try and find it, even checked on the LightSail Academic Resources page, but didn't come up with anything. He said, would Dr. Betts have been kind enough to accept simply metal?
No.
Here's our winner, Daniel in Forest Hills, New York. Get this, he is a past winner. It has been actually more than 5.5 years since he last won the competition.
Dedication.
Here is his response. The Lightsail 2 booms are made of cobalt steel, he says, if I'm reading the spacecraft specifications in your Lightsail facts or FAQ correctly. Is he right?
Yes. That's what we said they're made of.
But you have reservations.
I have reservations, and I'm not a metallurgist, so maybe one out there can correct me. But the alloy is its old trademark named as Elgeloy. It is indeed cobalt, but it's a cobalt chromium nickel molybdenum alloy. And so I would think, and this question led me to find this on our website, that it would not be called cobalt steel because it doesn't necessarily have or has very little carbon and iron. It is mostly cobalt and chromium. But I'm going to take it because, you know, we said that's what it was. So Elgeloy or cobalt steel or a cobalt alloy or any more gory detail of what this thing with wonderful magical strength and anti-corrosion properties is that Air Force Research Laboratory created our booms made of this stuff.
Daniel, therefore, you squeaked through. Also, gratitude and congratulations to everybody who came up with the right answer, as did a minority of entrants who responded with Elgeloy. By the way, Daniel adds, we're all hoping for and looking forward to the successful launch and mission of Lightsail 2 later this very month, Ad Astra. Daniel, thank you. You are going to receive a priceless Planetary Society kick asteroid, rubber asteroid, a 200-point iTelescope.net astronomy account on that worldwide nonprofit network of telescopes, and a copy of Chasing New Horizons, Inside the Epic First Mission to Pluto, by our friends Alan Stern and David Grinspoon. The paperback version of that terrific book has just come out.
All right. From what type of spacecraft will the Cosmic 2 set of spacecraft, launching with Lightsail 2, from what type of spacecraft will they be receiving signals from in order to study the Earth's atmosphere? Go to planetary.org/radio contest.
That's interesting. I can't wait to find out. You have until Wednesday, June 26th, with any luck, 2 days after the launch of Lightsail and these other spacecraft on the Falcon Heavy, Wednesday, June 26th at 8 a.m. Pacific time to get us your answer. And you might be the one who wins a Planetary Society kick asteroid, rubber asteroid, a 200-point iTelescope.net account. And this time, still got a lot of books here, a lot of great books, from our friend Rod Pyle, who is also the editor-in-chief of Ad Astra magazine. He's written so many books lately. This one is Heroes of the Space Age, and it's really about 7 books in one. They are profiles of people from Yuri Gagarin to Pete Conrad of Apollo 12 and other things. It's a terrific little book, and it might be yours with those other prizes. We're done.
All right, everybody, go out there, look up the night sky, and think about whether disturbing childhood jingles actually tell us that we should be calling Saturn the Rosy. Thank you, and good night.
Good night. Ring around the rosy, pocket full of pose. He's Bruce Betts, the chief scientist of the Planetary Society and the program manager for Lightsail, who joins us every week here for What's Up. Planetary Radio is produced by the Planetary Society in Pasadena, California, and is made possible by our high-flying members. Mary Liz Bender is our associate producer. Josh Doyle composed our theme, which was arranged and performed by Peter Schlosser. I'm Matt Kaplan, Ad Astra, and go Lightsail!